Welcome to episode 25 of Crossroads of Destiny and Avatar, the Last Airbender Universe podcast. Right now, we're talking about every episode of Nickelodeon's... No. Right now, we're actually talking about Netflix's live-action adaptation of Nickelodeon's Avatar, the Last Airbender, one at a time. I am Chelsea Hopkins, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Andrew and Melanie Grant. How are you two doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Doing it.
Good. One small thing to talk about before we dive into the episode is we did get the news over this last week that Netflix has not only renewed this show for a season two, but also for a season three, which means they are officially adapting the entire animated show.
Woo!
So, I mean, we'll see how it progresses and whether we consider that to be a good thing or not. But right now I'm erring on the side of it being a good thing because they are starting it and they are finishing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least we assume they are because Netflix is really trigger happy on the cancel button.
Yeah. But at least for right now.
Yeah. But I do think that if something is greenlit, then it is happening generally. And I assume that the reason they would greenlight both seasons at the same time is so that they could film them both at the same time, since these kids aren't going to be young forever, especially Gordon, who is the actor who plays Aang.
Yeah.
Gordon Cormier, I think. Yeah. Cormier. Anyways, just wanted to mention that we, as of the time of recording this episode, have not yet released our first episode, but that will come out probably in the next few days as I work on it. But we're eager to talk about it. So here we are. We are talking about episode two of Netflix's live action adaptation. It is titled Warriors. It's directed by the same guy who directed the first episode, Aang, and also is the cinematographer for the show, or at least one of them, Michael Goy. The teleplay or script for this episode is written by Joshua Hale Fielkov, which is different from the Aang episode because that one gave original writing credit to Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko, the original show creators. We are diverging from that a little bit more significantly this time around.
Felt it.
And
that was kind of evident.
And I guess I don't need to go over the air date because Netflix dropped the whole season at once, but this did come out along with all the other seven episodes of the season on February 22nd of 2024. Now, I'm going to forego a summary of this episode, mostly because I forgot to write one. But I mean, I guess I can give just a general overview, especially in relation to the animated series, because this is mostly adapting the episode of season one, or book one, chapter four, I believe, called The Warriors of Kyoshi. That is almost entirely the inspiration for this episode, although there are a couple of little nuggets that they're using to kind of set up episodes that they're going to skip in the future. So we can talk about that as we go. I don't think I have anything tidbit wise to mention right away, but I guess I'll just hand it over to the two of you. What are some of our initial thoughts after watching this episode tonight?
They like lumping things.
Yeah, they do.
They really played with my memory of, like, because I've only seen it.
That's exactly what I told Chelsea when we had paused it and you'd stepped out of the room. It was just like, I'm actually struggling to remember how this piece fit into the original series.
Right.
And it was really playing with my memory.
Are there any specific examples you can provide of that?
There was just a couple of things that happened where you're just like, that's not how. That's not how that happened.
I almost wish this was a video podcast so you could see all the faces that Andrew's
Andrew's very expressionable.
One of the bigger ones was, I don't remember him turning into Kyoshi.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah, so I'm thinking through the show, and admittedly, the entire run of the first original three seasons is not entirely fresh on my mind.
Right.
I do think there's a time later in the series, without being super spoiler heavy, where he does appear as Kyoshi.
Okay.
It's in book two or three somewhere.
Right.
It's some sort of festival, I believe, where they're actually like putting the avatar on trial.
Correct.
Yes. And so Kyoshi makes a physical appearance in that episode. But not in this episode.
Well, like his statement of like, I can only summon the avatars if I'm at their shrine.
That was like, interesting.
Was that a thing? Was that a thing in the original one?
Never no, explicitly right?
Okay,
said,
cool.
No,
see,
no.
I didn't think I like made that up in right. my brain.
And I like how you phrase that as explicitly said, because we do will eventually see him at another shrine so he can talk to a different avatar, but don't remember it happening with Kyoshi like this. Like, and the way we got Kyoshi's story, which we really didn't.
We didn't. You mentioned something when we were watching it.
Yeah, because I've read the books where awkward. They pulled right. Kyoshi's story from.
Right. How she, like, protected her community and separated islands and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like they kind of jumped onto Aang presenting as, like, Kyoshi in the Avatar state just so we still get that taste of the Bamf that is
yeah.
Kyoshi.
Yeah, like, I will say I really actually liked Kyoshi making a physical appearance, like Aang manifesting as Kyoshi right. in that fight. I thought that was really powerful. Mm-hmm. I wrote down some thoughts. I said it was a good glimpse into both his and her power and kind of her right. her attitude as the Avatar, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. like how scary she is.
Yeah, she was pretty intense. Yeah.
She's intense. I mean,
which is what everybody said she yeah. was. Yeah.
And I think the only difference in this series is that we are getting a taste of it right off the bat, mm-hmm. where in the animated series, like, you eventually learn yeah. Kyoshi did not mess around.
Yeah, so much of the first, like, season and a half of the animated show is very Roku-focused when it comes to talking right. to previous avatars. And mm-hmm. that was a concern I had. I have heard from just, like, general internet browsing
sure.
that there isn't much Roku in this season. Oh. Like, I don't know if that's going to play out or not. I understand it to a certain extent because we have gotten a lot of Kyoshi knowledge in the time since the original show. And so they can literally pull from additional source material and build on her as a character. Mm-hmm. And I like mm-hmm. that. But I also think that Roku is really really right. important to the
that's
story.
Like a right. major character to not add though.
Yeah, and so I mean I haven't heard that he's not in it at all.
Right.
I am just hopeful bridge, that maybe
like
he'll
some of these other things.
I'm hopeful that he'll at least show up to give the Sozin's comet mm-hmm. to
it's like the like, whole mm-hmm.
yeah the
part
whole crux
of
yeah
right.
the rest of the show
right.
yeah so we'll see. I don't want to base an opinion on what I've vaguely heard online, but right. Just again getting back to Kyoshi appearing, it also shows how powerful the Avatar state and how important it is that Aang gains some control over mm-hmm. that or some ability to generate it when needed. Mm-hmm. But I also liked in the context of this episode, like it would be different if Kyoshi made an appearance in the next episode, which is Omashu,
right,
than it did in this episode when they're on Kyoshi Island. Like mm-hmm. something that they more or less, I don't think it was an exactly a change or like a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But in the animated version of this episode, they are apprehended when they arrive on Kyoshi Island by the Kyoshi mm-hmm. warriors, but right. they're
almost
not.
Immediately.
I don't remember the people of the island being so, or especially the leader of the island being so like, you cannot be here.
Yeah, the timeline of 2 days or whatever, 48 yeah. hours. I don't remember that.
There might have been some trepidation because they were right. very clear in the animated show. We have stayed out of this war right. and we're not right. keen to get into it.
They definitely played into it a bit more.
Yeah.
I remember some yeah. like, y'all should be leaving. Like,
right.
Please.
You are not welcome here.
Like, they were well accepted by everyone in the village mm-hmm. because they eventually came to know him as the Avatar. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Avatar, in this case, an Avatar Kyoshi, meant a lot to them. So they did accept him eventually.
Yeah.
But at the first sight of him and newcomers to the island, I do remember there was some pushback.
Yeah. But I like that they played it up a little bit more here yeah. because it helped the turnaround at the end when she plays up the whole hope message that was a key part of that episode to begin right. with was, now that we know that the Avatar is back, we can be more hopeful and we can maybe be mm-hmm. more proactive in being involved, not isolating ourselves so that we can bring about the end of this war rather than trying right. to avoid it entirely.
Mm-hmm. Kyoshi did rip off a bunch of Band-Aids, though.
Yeah.
She, I mean, the fact, like, she's like, it's gonna get worse. This isn't gonna be easy.
The premonitions, like, did that happen in the...
No. So I
thought that was really interesting, though.
Yeah. I liked...
It felt very Lord of the Rings.
It did feel very Lord of the Rings.
I liked that Kiyoshi manifested. I liked all those things that I've already listed, but I had some issues with her overall. I thought she was a little too intense with Aang.
Yeah.
Specifically. Like, too harsh.
Yeah, too harsh. And like, she was blaming him for leaving.
Right, right, I was like, okay, he didn't leave. He probably wouldn't be here, bro. Like, what do you...
Yeah.
It's not like the Fire Nation attacked and he left. He left, and while he was gone, the Fire Nation attacked.
Exactly.
And something else entirely separate closed him off. And she knows that because she is him.
She is the Avatar, yeah. Right?
So why are you angry?
She was there.
It was a little too intense for my taste.
Right. And which is what I was saying, is like, because we do get that intensity from Kiyoshi at the end of the season in the animated series,
mm-hmm.
where he's trying to get some answers from past avatars, and Kiyoshi's the only one that's just like, listen, this is what has to happen.
Yeah, she is intense. Right. She has always been intense, and she was like, this is something that you have to do. And the vision or the premonition that you mentioned, Melanie, I'm trying to sort out my feelings about that specifically.
Right.
We knew to a certain extent ahead of time that premonition was coming. It's kind of the reason the creators gave, or the showrunner, whoever it is, gave for saying, we are not going to play with the elephant koi. Right. Like, we're not going to have these fun little episodes where Aang's going to be a kid. No, he's going to get a vision that is going to drive his purpose for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
A thought that I had really early in this episode is that everything is just so serious.
Yeah.
To their credit, there were a couple of moments where they tried to get to those moments of levity,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but to mixed success.
Yes, agreed.
And everything else was just so serious. And I'm having a hard time with that when the show is so, when I say show, the animated, is so lighthearted and fun, but then it twists into that serious moment that just like breaks your heart because you're caught off guard by it.
Yeah. You feel that loss of innocence.
Mm-hmm.
You feel it being stripped away from Aang in the animated series.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you see a young boy who literally just wants to like go back to the world and mm-hmm. play and do all of the fun things. And then you feel the immense force and pressure that's placed upon him where those things are stripped away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is kind of the portion that we're missing.
It's a key theme of the series is having to grow up faster than mm-hmm. they should.
They're not showing him as a kid.
No. So some of the moments of levity, there was the scene where Katara was training. She got a waterbending scroll, which we'll talk about in a sec.
Magically appeared out of nowhere.
She got a waterbending scroll, and then Aang shows up and he's like, oh, I'm scared to train right now because Monk Gyatso is the only guy I've ever trained with. I don't really love that. And then they have like a splash fight and it's like, yay, we're kids for this 5 seconds.
Even that
scene,
though, was super uncomfortable and awkward. It was very weird. It seemed very forced.
The moment that I did really like was not the lead in into it, but when he is out in the village playing with the kids.
Right.
Like we get to see the air scooter, which Woo-hoo. Was really fun.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which was something you were kind of nervous about not being a thing.
Yes, because even when Kiyoshi showed up, I was keenly aware of the limits of live action versus animation because that scene would have been so much more badass if it was animated than Kiyoshi showing up and like water whipping and then steaming all the Fire Nation that was there, the five people that were around her.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was a cool scene.
It was cool.
But it was just like, this could have been so much more if she had been mobile, if she'd used more than just...
I mean, we even see her take off with like jetpack arms and everything too. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do think, like, so far...
They're trying.
The CGI and the bending has met my very low expectation.
it's better than the Shyamalan, right, for sure. Which, and it's not even, like, barely better than the Shyamalan. It's much better.
Strides, yes.
But I still am just like, this is the limit. This is why this works so well as an animated show.
You just know, like, this is where it gets expensive. Mm-hmm. This is where their limitations are going to be. Because they can do a lot of these things, and it looks really good. They worked really hard to, like, make it not stand out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a computer image, but at the same time, yes, I understand where you're coming from, that there's not as much that they can do.
Right. And I mean, we still got lots of show. So maybe that gets better and better as our benders get better and better and we're exposed to more of it. Like, we still have seen very minimal earthbending, and we probably, well, next episode we'll see hopefully a lot more because we're going to presumably meet Boomy. But anyways, let's go through some other things.
I was just like, which Band-Aid do we rip off first, the Water Scroll or Saki?
Okay, well, we already mentioned the Water Scroll, so how about we do that one first? What did we think? So everybody who's listening to this has watched, I assume, but I will still just recap briefly because we're behind and it might have been a few weeks since you last watched it. Katara, when Momo sifts through her bag, finds a waterbending scroll in her bag.
She's like, what is this? It's like, what do you mean?
So obviously we are skipping the episode, the waterbending scroll from the original series. That's not going to happen anymore.
Which is a huge bummer.
It's a big episode.
It makes sense, though. It makes sense.
It's very tangential, but at the same time, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
It was one of my favesies. A little bummed. Also, it was weird.
It was weird.
Well, I'm glad they explained it somewhat with, like, Gran-Gran right. having a letter being like, I've kept this for years and it just wasn't safe to give it to you until now. But now you need to remember that you are a waterbender and be proud of that. And I appreciated Gran-Gran's encouragement.
It. Yeah.
But it, at first, I saw the waterbending scroll there. I thought she was just going to remember that she had a waterbending scroll.
Yeah. I did pack that, didn't I?
Good on me for remembering.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's a little weird. I thought the weirder part of that scene, though, is Aang and his trepidation at not wanting to learn to waterbend right then. Like, just to not even at least try a tiny bit.
And he's just like, no thanks.
Because, like, Katara was even doing the wave push and pull thing for a second. I was like, oh, which we're going to get a scene
they do.
From the show. Yeah. And Aang's going to show her up a little bit.
And have that tension of, like, yeah, they're there for each other, but Katara is still not the Avatar.
Well, and again, that is the focus of the waterbending scroll episode, is Katara feeling shown up by Aang and making mistakes and practicing at a time where she shouldn't, and then she's kidnapped.
Right.
So I just thought it was weird. I also didn't love Aang's whole, I had to learn how to control my powers.
I thought that was interesting.
I don't remember a scene where he tried to work some of his other airbender buddies.
Jeez, Andrew. Yeah, I thought that was weird.
Parts of that I liked. I liked that it shows how powerful kind of naturally he was, even before he knew he was the Avatar. And I think it kind of sets up the Firebending Master episode, where he tries firebending for the first time and accidentally bends.
Does it set it up?
Potentially.
Or does it supersede?
I don't know. We'll find out. Yeah. I haven't looked at the rest of the episode titles.
Or envelop. But like, I have a feeling we're not going to see that.
It sets up, though, the first time he tries to firebend, he accidentally hurts Katara because he can't control it. Mm-hmm. Like, they've now planted that seed that Aang is powerful but has a difficulty controlling things. Right,
because in the series we definitely get, like, the PG version of that, where, like, they're learning a new skill or they don't want him on a certain team because it's, like, not fair that they have the Avatar on their team.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's all we get is the fact that the Air Nomads were aware that he was powerful. There were some other things, but in the context of the fact that he just could learn and do things better, not necessarily that he was, you know, wielding a powerful weapon and could accidentally kill someone. And that's what we get. I appreciate that there's gravity to that.
Yeah. The only thing that is a little weird for me about that further than what I've already said is it's almost like they're mixing two issues. Like, there's Aang, the issue with his power that Aang has is being scared of the Avatar state and that being really powerful. And it feels weird to also make him scared of just normal bending.
Right.
Which in the show they didn't really indicate that he was ever really afraid of doing normal bending. No,
he was always gifted airbender.
Yeah, and he doesn't get afraid until he starts trying to bend fire.
Yeah, until he hurts Katara. Yeah.
Right. Like, in our watch through the animated show so far, the last firebending we saw from Aang, he says, I'm never going to firebend again. Like, that's where we left him off. Because he's scared, because he hurt Katara. Right. And so, I don't know. I will see how and where it goes.
Yeah. Because I think more to that point, is that they seem to be playing two sides of, like, Aang isn't powerful enough, but is also too powerful. Like, they're going both angles right now.
Yeah.
And it seems a strange...
Pick a struggle.
Yeah, it's a strange thing to play both sides.
Yeah. And the other thing you mentioned, how did you say it? Sokka?
Sokka, yeah. The Sokka-Suki relationship.
Ew, is that what, that's not what you were saying?
Yeah. I came around to it. I hated it. When it was happening in front of me, I was like, what is happening? So, here's the separation. They did take away the misogyny, and I hate that.
It doesn't work without that.
But more to the point that we're making earlier is that since the airing of the animated series, we see, I don't know if it's in further Avatar World stuff, but we see that they are tight knit, like they become more than friends and things of that nature. And because we have that information, they already have this like potent relationship right from the start. And I don't know, I think we skipped a step, like, because we know that something else happens between them, that now that we're reintroducing these characters, they're already at a further point than they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we first saw them, and like the next scene, Sokka is like actively pursuing Suki, I was like, that's not how this goes. That's not what happened. You know, it was just like he wanted to be around her. He wanted to learn things from her, but it was 1,000% trying to show her up. It was a tick against his pride that he was trying to make up ground to be the more impressive warrior.
Right. But the original point was, yes, that she was a more powerful warrior than he was,
mm-hmm.
but that she was a girl,
right,
who was a more right. powerful warrior. And that was what really hurt his pride. And the overcoming of that by the end of that episode and him saying, I should have realized that I shouldn't have seen you as a girl. I should have seen you as a warrior from the start. Right. And then she says, I am a warrior, but I'm a girl too. Mm-hmm. And she kisses him and it's sweet. And then they leave.
They do kiss.
I couldn't remember if they actually kissed or not.
I'm pretty sure they do.
They do. Yeah. You're right.
But I mean, that's all that is.
And that's a great line. That is in the subplot of the animated series,
mm-hmm.
that is a great bow to tie on that whole struggle that Sokka has the entire episode. In fact, he has for several more episodes even after this. But that's beside the point. It's like he overcomes it in the fact that he needs to learn that he is not in the, you know, Southern Water Tribe anymore. He is out in the world. He is going to be exposed to different things, different people who will have tremendous abilities. And it literally does not matter whether they're male or female.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed to overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get that.
No, instead they made it more about being a better warrior to make up for their lack of bending,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, I don't disagree with. That's another right. problem that Sokka has to overcome in that right. course mm-hmm. of that first season, especially. Well, I mean, through the whole series, really. I really missed out on the whole, not that I wanted Sokka to be a misogynist, right? Like, I don't want that, but I wanted him to maybe learn why that is bad.
They showed him a little, like a tidbit annoyed.
He was
by being one-upped by a girl.
But then it was like she was a girl though.
She was a girl,
or that she, I think, or it was that she was beating him.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it was because she was a girl. That's how I took it.
Well, I think that you can subvert that into it, knowing that that's what the original episode was all about.
Mm.
So like when he realizes that she's a girl, there is that like there's no verbal communication, but he is visibly shocked that it's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you can read that a little bit, but it also comes from the fact that we already know that that was an issue for Sokka in that episode. It's never verbalized. It's never grown on.
Yeah. Scene comparison in the animated version, when Sokka is like training in the forest or however they set that up in the animated show, Suki shows up and he's like, oh, I'm a man, so I'm going to show you how to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he's trying to mansplain all this stuff to her, and she doesn't she doesn't buy into it, or she shows him up in that time. And then he's like, oh, me being a man has no inherent advantage over the situation.
Correct.
So
the fact that, like, so in the anime series, you also have, like, Suki, it's not just, like, she also brings up that same point about overcoming something, but in the live action, she's talking about not being able to bend.
Mm-hmm.
In the animated series, it's like, no, I don't have to be, like, jacked to mm-hmm. fight someone who's strong,
mm-hmm.
because their whole point is to use their power and strength against them. Like, that is the Kiyoshi method.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't necessarily about being the bigger or stronger. It is about being the smarter and more gifted warrior,
mm-hmm.
to use whatever is coming at you to your advantage. And I think that was the more, they kind of, like, shifted it a little bit away from the, I may be smaller. Or, you know, obviously Sokka thinks himself stronger because he's a man.
Mm-hmm.
But the point in the animated series was, that doesn't matter because whatever you're bringing, I'm going to use against you.
I missed seeing him in the Kiyoshi garb as well.
Right.
Like, oh, we don't right. get that. Yeah. We didn't because get that.
That's another level of, like, showing respect that he has come around.
And overcoming his biases. Yeah,
this isn't about me. This mm-hmm. is about learning.
And mm-hmm. instead we get her taking off her makeup.
Yeah.
with her powerful makeup remover. She was just like, I knew that's what she was doing when her back was turned. She was like, you just see her arms like scrub, 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 scrub. And I was like, there's no way this chick is about to show that she took off all of that makeup, mm-hmm. all 17 and layers of
flawless.
It. And she looked eyeliner? Gorgeous yeah. with her eyebrows still done and her eyelashes.
There's
and
no more red. Eyeliner. There's no more red in the tear ducts.
Oh my gosh.
She got all of it out already.
I was like, okay, we need to be a little bit more believable, fam.
So I will say, like, with them, I loved the love, but I missed the conflict.
I missed the drama.
I missed the drama and the coming to respect one another.
Yeah. So there was one scene between Sokka and Suki that I liked, and it was when Zhao showed up and they were sort of tag teaming together. Mm-hmm. And there was mm-hmm. that final shot where Zhao threw the fireball and he took her fan and then waved the flame away. That was really cool.
That was really cool.
I liked that moment specifically.
Right. That was it, though. I didn't like any other moment.
The rest of it just didn't really work for me.
I did kind of like the Dirty Dancing nuanced little spoon while they're training.
It was weird.
I thought it was pretty amusing.
It was weird.
Oh, does she give him her fan?
I don't know. I kind of liked that.
It was cute. I loved it. Yeah. It was like, take a souvenir. Remember our kiss.
A little memento.
Yeah. A little memento. Yeah. But I didn't, I guess we're doing a really hard comparison between the two.
Yeah. I mean, I think people expect that, though.
Right. And I'm just like, that's what I was mentioned earlier. It's like, the show so far is really playing on my memory. Also, given the fact that I've only seen it one time, mm-hmm. these episodes,
mm-hmm.
not nearly as much as you guys have. So I'm glad that you are also having some struggle issues with memory of, like, did this happen? Did it not happen?
Right.
But yeah, I was trying to remember. I was like, I don't remember mm-hmm. that.
I think we've kind of beat up on the Sokka and Suki thing enough for now. Like, I liked some very minimal things. And then there were a lot of things I thought were, they just didn't play very well. Like, I'll mention one more moment. There was the initial confrontation in mm-hmm. the forest where first Sokka boomerangs a melon from like 5 feet away. I'm like, that's not impressive.
Right.
And then she shows him up with her fan versus his boomerang, which is cool. But then he's like,
oh, okay, their awkward fight scene.
Yeah, their awkward fight scene. He says, we're better at hand-to-hand combat. And so he's like, oh, okay, right now, because she takes a stance.
Right.
And while he is stretching, she grabs his arm and throws or like puts him in a neck hold. And
right. he's like, slowest,
I give up.
Slowest neck hold ever. Like, the transition of her, I don't know.
Yeah, all of that was awkward. So like,
it was so slow.
And that's the
he could have totally broken out of that.
Like, it's not like the whole thing was bad. It was like we were finally getting a little bit of like the Sokka goofiness mm-hmm. baked into the show, and like his reaction was like, oh, like right now, like obviously like is very Sokka.
Yeah,
and then I don't know what happened after that.
That just, travesty like, it of the fight got scene.
Weird, and then he just like left. And I was like, yeah, what is okay.
But there I feel was... like that's what a lot, there was a lot of those really awkward moments throughout. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes back to what you were saying, Chelsea, is like, they're so limited on what they're able to show from the animated series to this series as far as like fighting techniques and everything. Cause even like with Aang and Katara fighting each other or like airbending or waterbending, it's so like half-assed. It's not, there's not like any, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. There's, it doesn't seem like there's any like oomph behind it. It's very like lackadaisical movements.
It's like, well, they get to a moment where they're like, oh, we've been serious for very long. Let's do something silly, but oh, cut it there.
Yeah.
It was very uncomfortable. I wish everybody was actually able to see our reactions when we watched this because we were all just looking at each other like,
right. What and just I feel happened? Like it would have played a little difference if it was like, if we got like a Simba Nala moment, which we do eventually, but it was like if he like
a what?
Like with Elton John background down, vocals. Yeah,
oh, like Simba Nala.
Pinned him down and there was a little,
those words
there was like
in my
a little
brain.
Like cartoon blush or something, like a little anime blush.
Little anime blush, like squiggle on the cheeks.
Right. And then he ran off. That would have made sense, especially with how they played it out.
Yeah. He just got like immediately just turned around and was like gone.
I'm just saying it would have played differently if there was like they passed a threshold of some kind and he was like, oh wow. And like had to leave, but it was just like this really awkward headlock and he gets out of it. He like wants to leave and then leaves and like just walks away. There's no dialogue. Yeah. There's no anything. And it doesn't really play as like,
there's no emotion shown in it.
Right. There does. It doesn't play as a beginning of this relationship.
Mm-mm.
Like, oh, we were just messing around and it like it went too far.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he left. It was just like, okay, that happened. And then he walks away. So
yeah.
I don't know. There were some choices that needed to be made. And it was just very obvious that it was kind of ambiguous. And I didn't appreciate
we're that. Having to just draw on the knowledge of what we had in the show prior mm-hmm. that we knew he, like you said earlier, mm-hmm. we knew he was mad. Or right. upset in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody watches the show as a complete novice and not having any prior knowledge
mm-hmm.
and they saw that, they would have been like, he's just, I guess, needed to be somewhere else. Like,
he's got to go. He's got a meeting.
Yeah. I think for a novice watcher, there are certainly things that are hard to understand without the context of the original show, but I also think they would be a lot less critical overall than we're kind of being. And I do want to emphasize, we're getting towards the end of our discussion. I do want to emphasize that I am enjoying watching so far.
Right.
And
it is really, really, really cool. I'm enjoying it.
It's clearly a very different story.
Yes. And I'm also enjoying the comparison and enjoying the mm-hmm. picking apart mm-hmm. and all that contrasting kind of stuff. I'm enjoying that. I like seeing what's different. And I think it's interesting to talk about what works versus what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So the only other like main thing to talk about in this episode is Zuko
mm-hmm.
and Zhao and all of that going on.
Ooh, I liked it.
You did?
I did.
Okay. What are you?
That was so awesome. If anybody could figure that out, really? Chelsea didn't like it.
No. Okay.
Oh,
that's a choice.
What did you like about it?
Well, I just like, I think I actually like that actor. Zhao's like the actor who plays Zhao. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really intense actor and he plays the villain really well. So I enjoyed seeing him in this. Maybe that's why I enjoyed it.
What I wrote is Zhao doesn't have the menace of Jason Isaacs.
Ooh, well, no. He's also a very good villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, there needs to be something that reads sinister immediately.
He doesn't have like the evil like scowls or anything.
I didn't get an intensity from Zhao.
Right.
Mm.
And I don't want to... I love Iroh so much.
I was going to say, I think he's very quickly becoming my least favorite character.
Yeah, I had some thoughts on that as well. I said... Yeah. Still not the force of calm I wish he was.
Right.
He's got no warmth.
It seems very forced.
And the problem, they tried to write the Iroh character a little bit more this time.
Yeah.
But the acting
is not there.
And I don't even know if it's an acting limitation right. versus just like, again, a live action versus cartoon mm-hmm. kind of limitation. Like, there's just something about Mako's voice in the original live action series and the way he sounds and the way he's animated and the way he's shaped and like all that kind of stuff. Right. It's just like old grandpa who makes me feel really good and is able to calm down Zuko.
Right. And we get the words a little bit of what Iroh would say.
Yeah.
With this, like, oh, you need this and you need sticky rice. Like,
yeah,
that was amusing. But at the same time, it still didn't read as genuine Iroh.
No, no.
Mm-mm.
We even got a Pai Show reference, which felt out of place because we haven't seen Pai Show, and Pai Show's not a real thing. They invented it for Avatar. So it's like, again, a novice watcher, like, what is he talking about?
Yeah. And yes, it's strange because, like, looking back, I remember Iroh's lines, and it's almost like he, like, sang the entire time. There was, like, a Zuko, like there was he
like a melodic had, like transition into
that kind of carried through his entire sentence, and I did not realize I would miss it so much.
Yeah,
and I love the fact that he's not trying to emulate it.
Yes,
but I still haven't fell in love with Iroh's character in the live action.
No,
he hasn't won me over.
He's so stiff.
Yeah, he's not.
He's so stiff.
The bring Zuko back down to earth, like again, the episode literally opens in that scene where he's trying to, like, Zuko is tearing his own ship apart, and Iroh is trying to calm him down.
Well, it's less trying to calm him down. The way it comes across, it's less trying to calm him down and more stern talking, like trying to talk him out of it. It feels less from like a meditative, just enjoy some jasmine tea kind of perspective, and more of a, this is a logical reason for you to stop.
Yeah, I really wish there was just more tea involved.
He's only mentioned tea once, right?
I don't remember him ever mentioning
it. Didn't he mention it with Aang? Didn't he invite Aang to maybe tea?
Because that was always the thing, is with Zuko, he would be in this like super angsty middle of like a heated meltdown, and you just have Iroh like
fixing tea
in the corner. It's okay, don't worry about it. Like, just come over here and have some tea. Like, he didn't convince Zuko to stop what he was doing. It was a wholehearted, genuine distraction to get him out of his own head, and then they could progress forward. Mm-hmm. And that's like what Iroh did. And if it wasn't like so ingrained into his character that we witnessed him do that every single time things got crazy, that it was just this jovial, happy guy who really just wanted to not do things. Because honestly, like there's also that part of Iroh that I'm missing, is just like, that sounds like a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Like the kind of like, I'm an old man. I really just want to like stay over here and rest and make some tea.
Yeah.
Like, can you not? there was always that kind of level of his character as well that I enjoyed. It was just where Zuko was going crazy and we have to do all these things. And he's like, or we could hang out for a bit. Like,
we could have a chill night in, play some Pai Show with some tea.
Exactly.
Listen to the Soongi horn, which there was the musical motif where there was a little bit of Soongi horn in like one moment. And I mean, I have some mixed feelings over them, like, just using music from the series.
Right.
They're going for a translation and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
It just feels weird sometimes. Anyways, I don't know if there's any other major things to talk about. I just found somewhere in my notes, so that maybe brought out my real problem with Zhao. And there was no poking fun at Zuko for being the banished prince or trying to get under his skin. There was no antagonism between them.
Right.
To build that rivalry.
So written, the words that were there could have been played differently to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, we're not used to having such VIP. Like, he could have
leaned
into that and been like real sarcastic about it. Because I think when they mentioned the Dragon of the West,
they mentioned it.
There's some sarcasm in the animated series. When we first learned that he has this nickname, it's like, you're retired. You're old and not really relevant.
There's no
anymore.
Respect.
This person I'm referring to doesn't exist anymore.
Right. There's no respect because Zuko has been banished and gone and searching on a fool's errand for 3 years, and Uncle has been the person foolish enough to accompany him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. and is washed up and old. Like, mm-hmm. he's not doing the things that he was doing.
Yeah.
Like, he had clout, but it's all past tense.
Right.
And so I feel like the words were there.
The delivery wasn't.
That could have been delivered in a way where you get those digs. Where, like, I just remember the VIP line. But at the same time, it's just like, you're really not welcome here. Like, come on in, I guess. But I'm not going to treat you special because you may have the title, but everyone knows it's a joke.
Mm-hmm. I don't really know if I have anything else to mention. Did you, either of you have anything?
We get Momo.
We got Momo.
And I think he looks fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally enjoy his little face. And yeah. I like that Sokka calls him a drumstick.
Yeah.
Constantly kind of threatening like to eat him.
That we finally get. There's some.
It's cute.
We finally get a little bit of Sokka moments through Momo.
Momo. So there's good. Momo helped into the attack on the Fire Nation. Yeah. Precious. It was a little rock throwing.
He's an earthbender after all.
He's like, doesn't he look like a Momo? You look like a Sokka.
Yeah.
And then Katara just said, you can't argue with that. And I'm like, what?
I don't know. I haven't believed into the whole Katara actress yet.
She's not there. Aang, to be honest.
I know. The only one that's like living kind of up to it is Sokka.
Yeah. We even got a Sokka stuffing his face moment in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He just like angrily was eating.
I guess that's kind of the last thing I wanted to mention is, again, this show is just so serious so far.
Yeah.
We get those brief moments where they're trying to be like, oh, they're kids. And then they move on really quickly.
They're not kids. Just kidding.
It's not like a lingering aspect of their personality. It's like they are trying to remind us every once in a while because they're not playing it up anywhere else.
But for real.
Tell us how you really feel, Chelsea.
But for real, yes. That we don't get a taste of it anywhere else.
Yeah, I wrote, these speeches are lacking the wisdom and heart of what we get in the show.
They're
like,
just
I
delivered.
Didn't...
I would ask you what you're referring to, but it's literally
all of it.
It's all like when they show up. And Aang is trying to convince the leader of the village to let them stay. And I was like, okay, I didn't buy anything you just said. Or like, not that I didn't buy it, it's just like, it wouldn't have convinced me. Like, mm-mm. Okay, cool. And then.
Sure.
And then later when Aang goes out and he's playing with the kids, the scene that I liked, in the background, Katara and Sokka are like, he just has a way with people like he had last night. And I was like, I didn't see that. Yeah. I don't see it yet.
Not there
and
yet.
I want to keep giving them chances. It's
episode
two.
It's like they're trying so hard. I know he's like however old the actor is. But whenever he was, I mentioned it to you guys, whenever he buried Monkeyatsu and he came, like he lifted his face and he had tears in his eyes. He was like, I'm trying not to blink. I'm trying really hard not to blink so I can cry. And it was just not believable.
Yeah.
It was not believable. But.
And it's a shame because
he's a little kid.
He looks great.
He does. That's what's something like really minor. And I don't know if it's because I'm rewatching all of Project Runway right now, but all of their costumes are so cool.
They're really good.
Their makeup is impeccable.
Well, even like his voice.
They make it work.
Like, he sounds like a kid. Like he everything. Looking at him and listening to him sounds fine, but it's just like he's not super well written right now, and he's not super well acted right now.
Mm-mm.
I will say,
there
was one kind of sore thumb moment when Katara is next to Aang, who's in the spirit trance.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to the edge of wherever this ledge thing, sees Zuko coming, and she turns back to go to Aang, and she takes this like really like. Slow walky step.
Yeah, I think Aang. I know the moment you're talking about too.
And it's just like the dude who is hunting you just showed up.
He's here
now. Like that, you didn't just go and like, oh yeah, that's a nice waterfall. I'm gonna go tell Aang about it. You saw your enemy who is trying to murder you.
He invaded your village in the last episode,
and the person who stopped that. Is essentially in a coma.
Yeah.
You took that really well.
And you just gonna mosey on back to Aang and let him know what's going on.
That's like the other thing. Her like whole defense for Aang in that moment, her like water bending. It was so boring.
I mean, I know. The basicness.
It was just, it was just like, it was lame.
Yeah.
It was lame, guys. Okay.
I guess the very last thing to mention before we close up is we saw the Fire Lord.
We did.
We saw Daniel Day-Kim as Fire Lord Ozai. Yeah. He looks great.
He does. Yes,
he does. He looks really good. I think it's maybe a little bit weird that he knows that the Avatar is back, because I don't
remember him being tipped off.
Well, they would have kept it secret because both Zuko and Zhao are chasing the Avatar for their own glory.
The first, whoever got to him first wanted to be for like, ta-da! I show you the Avatar now.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily presenting the information. It was they needed to bring the Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And so letting the Fire Lord know that the Avatar is back isn't helpful.
A little cart before the horse.
Yeah, letting him know that the Avatar is back before they have captured him makes it, like, I don't know, it makes it weird for them. Like, there's almost a timeline on it now. It's like, I don't know, it took you this long to capture him or whatever.
I know, they had to, I mean, I guess they just had to figure out a way to have introduced him to the series, and I guess that was the best way they could figure it out to do it. It was weird.
And then, speaking of characters who just, like, can exude sinister, he
looks great. I think he's going to be great. Yeah. I mean, I hope he's going to be great. Well, anything else to say about this episode?
No, I think it was a good episode.
I had to learn to like it.
I know. It really sounds like we didn't like it, but I think we did. Yeah. It's just,
we're enjoying the picking apart and comparing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But we are also enjoying just like watching, even though there's some scenes that make us like look at each other.
Cringe.
And like, don't know what's happening.
Die inside.
Yeah. Okay, so the next episode is called Omashu. So we are going to meet Bumi in the next episode.
Ooh, I'm so excited.
We're
going to
get a lot more earthbending in the next episode.
Yes. Earthbending is my favorite. Have I mentioned that before? Earthbending is my favorite.
It's very cool.
That's why I really want to go back to the Nickelodeon one, because we're really close to like
some really awesome earthbending.
Yes.
Earthbending.
Yes. We'll get there.
And it's like we're right there on the edge and we're not doing anything about it.
Well, that is the end of the 25th episode of Crossroads of Destiny. You can contact the show, facebook.com/xroadspod or at xroadspod on Twitter. Consider going over to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a rating and a review and hitting that subscribe button. It helps us with reach. And you can email feedback and ideas to our email address, xroadspod@gmail.com. Melanie, do you want to mention your Instagram?
Yeah, sure. Every time. It's going to be MelanieAmanda44. Come and check out some adorable babies.
Yeah, that's the draw for sure.
Yes, yeah. They are pretty adorable.
Yeah, and if you want to reach Andrew, reach out to Melanie or reach out to me.
Don't go to his site. He's not there.
The best place for me is on Twitter. That's ChelseaCC_17. That's spelled out in the show notes. I have my other podcasts, the Cinescope podcast and An American Workplace, which I'd love if you checked out as well. And all of our show notes and contact information can be found at our website, xroadspod.com. That is all. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you in episode 26 when we talk about live action episode 3, Omashu.
Omashu.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Could we also call it sucky?
Yeah. No, we cannot.
It was not. Well, yeah, for other reasons.
I mean, or if he's just into choking and that was what it was about.
Oh my gosh, Andrew. You're taking that out.